Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire, a leading provider of workforce planning and analytics solutions.
What? Award-winning solutions? What'd they win?
All right, let's see here. Human Resource Executive Magazine names Acquire Insight a 2010 top HR product. No. Well, it couldn't happen to a better sponsor. Congratulations, Acquire.
Happy hour. How's everybody doing tonight?
Oh, I like that intro. That was a nice one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Welcome, everyone. This is HR Happy Hour, episode 66. We're doing the Wrestling with Wellness show. It's our first ever.
66, right?
Yeah, it's our first ever wellness show, and that's pretty cool. Nice. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah, you know what? Oh, I'm seeing a little bit of an issue right now, though. Shauna, can you just hang on 1 second? I'm looking at the switchboard now, and I'm seeing a little bit of a problem with our show, that it's the duration is set for only 12 more minutes to go, so we're going to have to get that fixed, hopefully.
good night, everybody. It's been great.
Yeah, so we'll see if we can get that fixed right now really quickly.
Awkward.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll try to get that fixed. If we get cut off too early, we're going to be in trouble. So let's get right to it. Let's welcome our first our guest to talk about wellness tonight. Our first guest is Fran Melmed. Fran is a great friend of the show. She's been in the communications business for a long time. She founded her own company, Context Communications, in 2003. She writes a great blog at Free Range Communication. Fran, welcome to the show tonight. How are you?
Good. I'm good. And just to set everybody at ease, I want you to know that I'm sitting here with a big chocolate chip cookie.
Nice.
That's great.
I approve entirely.
Thank you.
Let's welcome our next guest, Greg Matthews, to the show. Greg has been in around this game for a long time as well. Worked for doing a lot of HR work for the last 15, 17 years. Worked for Humana for a while, and now is doing a new thing in communications and social media in and around the space. Greg Matthews, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
That's super. Hey, let's do a quick reset. It's HR Happy Hour. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. I'm going to try to solve this little issue that we have with the duration of the show. We're also trying to track down our guest, our third guest, Tanya Barham from Recess Communications. Tanya, if you're on the line right now and can hear, just press 1 on your handset so I know which number you're calling from, and I can pop you up right away and get you online, because there's quite a few folks online, and I don't know which one is Tanya. So we'll get to her right away.
Oh, no.
So, yeah.
Well, the real Tanya, please raise your hand.
That's right, exactly. So if you're out there, Tanya, please press 1 on your phone, and we'll get you on board right away. So I do want to just make a couple of quick announcements. We do have a Twitter hashtag, HR Happy Hour, as well. We'll be following the tag along on there. If we do happen to get cut off at the 15-minute mark for some reason, and I'm not sure why that would happen. If we do, my advice to everyone listening who wants to stay on board with us is to call in to the call-in number 646-378-1086, and the show will carry on as is while we're trying to solve that problem. So, you know what, Shauna, maybe you can do me a favor while I try to get the show moving. Is on the switchboard down in the lower section, click on the request support button and shoot a message to our friends at Blog Talk Radio and see if they can extend our show once the show has already started.
Sure. I will ask.
Okay, great. So, and I do apologize in advance. I don't know how that could have happened, but all right, we'll wing it. So it could be a short show. But at any rate, if we do get cut off, we'll carry on the phone lines, and everything else will make the archive, and we'll make sure everybody gets the link to the archive's download file after the show. So, all right, awesome. I love this. I love when you get, like, flustered. This is like the presenter, right, at the event.
Oh,
none of the technology works.
Yeah,
that's
great. You're a pro, Steve. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
All right, so let's get started because we better right away. So, Fran, let me throw it out to you. We're doing a show about wellness, and I'm not sure if it was your idea, my idea, sometime back to do a wellness-themed show, but I think it's a great idea. And I thought maybe I'd throw it to you and just to kick us off. Why is this such a hot topic in corporate America right now? You know, aside from the obvious, but, I mean, our nation's always been kind of slovenly, fat, and out of shape, right? I mean, haven't we been? Like, why is this so important now, more than the last 5 to 10 years?
Right. Well, first of all, let me just start off by saying that as a former drama major, I don't really do sound bites. I do soliloquies. So I tempt anybody on Twitter to try and capture, you know, in this 140 characters what I'm saying. But to me, I lay down a challenge, right? But
nice.
To me, I think that, you know, one of the things that is a misperception is that this is, first of all, uniquely American and new. If you talk to certain companies like Pitney Bowes, they've been doing this for a long time. Or if you look at certain studies like from the World Economic Forum or MetLife, they have done global health studies. Countries and companies worldwide are looking at health and well-being and have been doing so for a long time. Some of the urgency that we're feeling right now may be the pressure from healthcare costs and a focus on engagement. You know, one of the studies found that employees whose companies support their health and well-being, they're 8 times more engaged. And we know that from former HR happy hours, how hot a topic engagement is, and also how controversial it is, just like wellness. But I think that some of those more pressing, more current factors around cost are driving a lot of companies to pick this up now. My hope is that may be the door opener for them, but as they get more attuned to what wellness really is, how expansive it is, and what it can deliver, that conversation will shift from just healthcare cost containment to about anything from productivity to happiness if you're Zappos, which I know people have strong feelings about Zappos.
Right. Fran, thanks for that. Hey, Greg, in your opinion, how did wellness really reach inside the organization? What was the driver behind that, at least initially? Was it insurance companies, organizations themselves? You know, how did it really sort of become an issue inside the workplace beyond more than just sort of a general societal issue?
Sure. I think in my experience, which kind of started in the 90s and has proceeded up till now, I think there are two main drivers, and Fran hit on one of them. I think we're kidding ourselves if we ignore the fact that cost is the number one driver for companies to think about this. They're looking at any way they can to reduce healthcare costs in their organization. They're looking for any way they can to squeeze more productivity out of employees. And so I think cost is a major factor. But I also think that as we've gone through a couple of boom cycles over the last, 15, 18 years, employers have found that wellness programs can actually be an attractor for top talent. Now, I think there's a disconnect between what people say they want and what they actually do once they're inside a company, but I do think that being able to advertise that you have cutting-edge wellness programs is an attractor, and especially in boom period, that's an important thing for a lot of companies that want to stay competitive. So I guess having worked as an HR person for a mid-sized business and working for an insurance company, I have a relatively cynical attitude about the current climate for wellness. But those are the two factors that I think are the most important.
It's interesting what you said about the disconnect, because earlier, right before the, like an hour before the happy hour started, I had tweeted out some figures, which I don't have open right now, but it was about the perceptions of employees versus employers about how much more productive they would be with support for health and wellness. And the employees felt it would be much more valuable than the employers felt it would be. And I just think that was an interesting disconnect that we've seen elsewhere between employees and employers about what the employee actually values versus what the employers think the employee will value.
Well, and the other disconnect there is that it's what employees value and then what they actually do.
Mm.
So knowing that you have a wellness program is great. Actually participating in it is quite another matter.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that, you know, we've been trying to tackle is how do we change wellness in such a way that, number one, it's more effective, number two, that it links in with the strategy of the business, and number three, that it's fun and people want to do it.
Yeah, Fran, Greg, thanks for that. Let me just do a quick reset and a bit of a warning as well. We have put in a request to our friends at Blog Talk Radio to try to extend out our show. For some reason, our show, when it got set up, had a cutoff at the 15-minute mark, which, as you know from our show, is not the normal cutoff. So it is still showing at only a couple minutes left, which is, again, my apologies for that. So if you're hanging out and listening tonight and you want to continue listening to the show and you want to be sure you don't get cut off from the live stream on the Internet, my advice to you right now is begin calling in to the call-in number 646-378-1086 and just call in. You'll be able to continue to listen to the show on the phone. And if we don't get the show extended to our normal time, the live stream is going to cut off here in just a couple of minutes. And, again, we'll carry on anyway with Greg and Fran. And Tanya, if we can find her. Tanya, if you're out there, please press 1 or tweet out the area code you're calling from, and we'll find you on the switchboard. But otherwise, if we do get cut off, again, my apologies. We'll carry on with Fran and Greg and everybody else who's on the line as well, and we'll make sure that the archive of the show gets made available just as soon as we're done talking. So, again, my real apologies for that, and hopefully our friends at Blog Talk Radio can sort that out here in the next 2 minutes or so.
Trying.
Yeah.
Currently trying.
That is true.
I think I have it.
Are you able to take care of it, Shauna, you think?
I'm trying right now.
All right. So Shauna's going to try to take care of the show right now. You've got the show length of the time.
I'm moving.
You've got a minute to go, so hopefully that'll work out. So,
like a MacGyver episode.
You got to love, Greg, we've gone, this is episode 66 of the show, and we've had any number of things go wrong, sound quality and Internet going down and connectivity issues and random sounds from strangers, right, on the phone. And we had a prank call one time, and this is the first time we ever had a show.
Did it work?
I don't know. I'm doing a refresh right now, Shauna, to see what happens. Hopefully it did. So if we get again,
I think we should all feel comfortable blaming Fran.
Nice,
Greg. You know when I said earlier that you were right, I take it back.
Come on!
How quickly we turn! Take that drink away.
Nice.
Works now.
All right. So anyway, it doesn't look good for our extension of the show. So I have a feeling we're about to get cut off.
Oh, damn.
All right. Well, let's
go on.
We're
going to
carry
Titanic because it went down.
Yeah, no kidding. We're going to carry on regardless, and with our 30 seconds to go. And again, my apologies to the folks listening out on the live stream if we get cut off a little bit early, a lot early, as a matter of fact, and we'll just carry on from there. I'd like to ask Greg and Fran just a little bit about wellness programs in terms of, beyond that, the cost containment issues, and companies are looking at the cost issues of health insurance and health, rising health claims. I mean, is there evidence out there yet that the corporate wellness programs and effective ones actually drive more benefits beyond just cost containment, productivity, satisfaction, other kinds of benefits to the organization?
I think that you would find that some people would say yes, some people would say no. There's some studies, there was a Harvard study that said for every dollar that you spend, you get back 3.27 on medical costs or 2.73 on absenteeism. I've referred before to 8 times more likely to be engaged, and other studies have talked about the connection between engagement and performance. There's also studies that talk about 1.8 fewer days absent. There's a Towers Watson study, Staying at Work, that talks about 11% higher revenue per employee and 28% higher shareholder returns that's health and wellness. So it's broader than necessarily saying, you know, hey, we have a nutrition management, a tobacco cessation, and a fitness, a fitness club reimbursement. It's really looking at some broader factors. But so there are some studies, and then all people say, like, yeah, I'm not sure, you know, what did they look at, and so forth. So I think that's arguable. I don't know what you would say, Greg.
Yeah, I think that there's probably more indirect evidence than direct evidence. There are some studies that, you know, having worked at an insurance company, one of the things that is beneficial about that is you have access to all kinds of interesting data. And Humana was pretty fired up about doing different things relative to wellness. And I think it was one of the first companies to do a rewards-based program centered around a pedometer and activity. And that doing that program yielded a lot of really interesting data. Number one, it yielded some data that said every point of BMI over normal costs about $20 in healthcare costs. Another one said that the people that participated in the pedometer-based wellness program had medical costs that were about $1,400 per year cheaper. And so there were some studies there, but Fran is right. There's nothing that can tie, you know, in my mind, distinctively that wellness programs equal, you know, $3 per one stat. I have a hard time with those because the variety in wellness programs is so broad, and what you define as a wellness program is so broad that I have a little trouble with some of the direct studies. But I think certainly the indirect evidence is pretty compelling.
Right.
And I think that if you look at some companies that are doing this very broadly, holistically, they are seeing trend line changes for their healthcare costs. I know I'm talking with Colette Cote from Pitney Bowes, and they've been doing this for a long time, and they've certainly seen significant ROI. One of my clients has seen a difference in their trend line, and I don't have the – I'm sorry, I'm bad with data, so I don't have it right at my fingers, but I can share it with people on my blog later. But they have certainly seen a change in their healthcare trend line since they started making more inroads with not only offering what you would consider maybe your classic wellness program, you know, some challenges, the tobacco cessation that we talked about and so forth, but also they've changed the way that they designed some of their pharmacy benefits programs. So if you have diabetes, you get your tools and prescriptions for free. Same with asthma. They have different disease management programs, so things that are much more, they're lowering the barriers. So what, you know, when Greg was talking about making it more fun, that's definitely reducing a barrier because a lot of us have negative feelings about eating better or exercising or something. It's hard, it's difficult, it's not always fun, particularly in the beginning when you're making a change. But there are other barriers in terms of time and money, and those are some of the things that companies need to look at to see where can they be at play to reduce the barriers to entry.
Right. Thanks, Fran. And I just, you know, I know the live stream, Sean, unfortunately, as you can tell from our friends on Twitter, the live stream did cut off.
That was
and
my plan.
I've lost the switchboard, too. Sean, I don't know if you have
no,
it still.
I don't.
Yeah. All right, so
I'm asking if there's anything we can do, but I don't know. MacGyver, I am not. I am sorry.
Yeah. So hopefully folks who can still – we tweeted out the phone number. Hopefully if anybody can if anybody actually from this point forward does call into the call-in number and can pick up the show, please let us know on Twitter if you're out there, and we'll make sure we'll get that out. We can take up to 500 simultaneous callers, so if you're near a phone, just call in and 646-378-1086, and you'll be on board. And again, my huge apologies for that.
Sorry, guys.
Not what we had intended once we had got started. So, and the call-in, I'm getting a message on Twitter that says the call-in number is saying that there's
waiting
no show currently scheduled. So,
shoot, that was what I was afraid of.
Yeah, all right, well, we're just going to carry on, and, you know, for the archive, and there's a lot less pressure now, Shauna, right, knowing that the most of the audience got cut off, and it's just those folks who were on the line. It's about 12 or so folks, I think, at the time when we cut off. But that's great. So, Greg and Fran, I'm going to talk a little bit about, and Fran, I know you've written about this on your blog, just a little bit about sort of the sensitivity to concerns that some employees might have and of organizations getting sort of involved in their health and wellness at maybe what could be perceived as too personal a level. I mean, do you think that it's a place where companies are going there, but what about the backlash that employees might have with companies getting too involved in their what they might consider their sort of personal lives?
Is that directed at me or
I'm going to direct it at you first. Sure.
Well, I have a couple of different thoughts on that. One is that clearly there are privacy issues around this that we have laws to protect people, so that that a company can't make certain decisions based on finding out that somebody has a chronic condition and so forth. And I know Greg will talk about this from his perspective at an insurance company. And I think that it's also that people have, we have built-in barriers to people intruding on our decisions around what we eat and so forth. I know that, for instance, Paul Hebert, who's on the call, has very strong opinions because he and I have talked about this. And some of where I think it gets gray is that we have employer-provided benefits, and companies pay a good portion of the benefits. At current, it's about 70%, and that's just an average. And so with doing that, I believe that it makes it very gray about where they can say, we need you to make certain changes to be healthier. We are helping to share in this bill, in this healthcare bill, and therefore that it gives us certain rights. It's how that's done and how then that translates. Like I know later on we may end up talking about social media and how that can encourage people to support and motivate one another. That gets really gray if you start doing that in a organization where you start allowing them to talk about their conditions, their concerns, their work stressors. How does that happen without becoming perhaps fraught with dangers or perceived dangers by the employee? I feel like it's a hard thing to answer, so I'm sorry. That's a very broad response, I realize. Greg, do you want to add?
Yeah, I can chime in there. I think most of the time I see employees either embracing or ignoring wellness programs, but not necessarily being leery of them. And that's partially because I think most wellness programs have probably been pretty, not very scary. But what's interesting is that when I was at Humana a few years ago, we started thinking about, well, you know what, we're going to make the decision not to hire anybody who smokes in states where it's legal to do that.
Right.
And that is a huge issue. And it raised a lot of questions about the employer's role in promoting employee wellness. And frankly, it was interesting because we were expecting a pretty massive backlash to that. The company actually implemented that 2 years ago in the state of Ohio. And it actually got very little attention. And so I guess this is sort of my long way of saying that there are lots of people who are sort of fearful about what will happen with privacy, but I haven't seen it really impact people's behavior or cause a lot of outcry. And I think hopefully part of that is because of something that Fran mentioned. You know, there are laws in this country, really strong ones, that favor employees and protect them in terms of the confidentiality of their data
right.
and their ability to seek employment. So I think that there's a lot of protection for employees out there, and so I think there's maybe a vocal minority who raises those concerns, but I have not seen that play out significantly in the real world.
And can I chime in with another thought?
Sure.
In that some of it also comes down to how companies, I feel, how companies design their programs. So are they supporting, meaning that they are saying, you may have health goals, we're here to help you, just like you may have financial retirement goals, we're here to help you with the 401k, we're here to help you with financial counseling, we're here to help you with a lifestyle fund that's easier to use than you're trying to be a fund manager. So some of it comes from how does the company come into it? Are they coming in from that supportive environment? Are they coming in from a punitive environment? If you don't hit this BMI or this cholesterol rate or something, then, hey, you're paying more, without also giving them the time and the tools and the either paid for or discounted programs to make change. So that is something that I think that plays into the privacy. The other part that also is something that is related to what Greg had said, which is that, you know, employees, sometimes they see the disconnect a lot of times. We talked about this on CoHealth. Greg and I started a workplace wellness tweet chat that happens once a month. And one of the times we were talking about the disconnect that happens in companies. Well, it's, you know, how many of us have shown up for a meeting at a company that says we're all about health and wellness and there are donuts on the table? Now, I have nothing against donuts. I eat dessert three times
donuts
a day,
awesome.
Literally. And I don't feel there's any reason to not do certain things. But people look at this and say, how sincere are you? And that's a small example of that. But then you get to bigger examples, like Steve, you have mentioned before, of I'm busting my butt, working 60 hours a week, 70 hours
right.
a week. We're laying off people. You're putting more on me. Well, then there's a real disconnect, right? Because how am I supposed to be healthy?
Right.
How am I supposed to not be stressed? How am I supposed to be home with my family teaching my kids, you know, healthy habits?
Right.
We have a big
working
problem with childhood obesity.
Working in your artificially lit, no window
right.
cubicle, right?
Right.
For 12 hours a day. Yeah,
right.
Sure. Right.
So wellness can't be just a program, right, while your culture is toxic. You need to look at the whole thing.
I totally agree.
Go ahead, Greg.
And frankly, I would add on to that. The good news about that is that those cultures can change over time. Those kind of attitudes can change, but it does take time. You know, in the beginning, it may start with a program, but certainly, you know, if you're patient, persistent, creative, and get wellness programs to the point where employees actually enjoy them and participate in them, I think it's possible to move the needle on some of those cultural issues that you raised, Fran.
Yeah, and I have a client who's a manufacturing client, and they've had layoffs, they've had mergers and acquisitions, they've offshored, everything you can actually name they've done. And they have, since 2003, we've been working together on kind of creating a culture of health. And just this year, the coolest thing happened. They sent me a clipping from a actually it was Kentucky, Greg, your former home, where one of the locations put in a company garden. By themselves, you know, they localized it. They customized it and they localized it, and that's happening throughout the organization. And it just takes that time, and it takes finding those champions, and it takes kind of letting people do what they'd really like to be able to do, because I don't think anybody goes out there and says that I want to be unhealthy, I want to shorten my lifespan, you know, I don't want to be here for my kids when they grow up.
You're right, right, yeah. Well, right, that's that classic line, right? No one ever hits the end of their life and says, boy, I wish I would have spent more time at the office.
Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. You know, normally, Shauna, I'm throwing off the game because we're not sort of streaming live right now, right? Normally I'm giving the show
we
reset.
Can't take questions.
I know. We're taking questions. We're giving out the phone number. So I'll just say this in my normal time where I pause to reset the show. Again, apologies for the live stream that cut off. We are recording this for posterity and for the archives. And quite frankly, Sean, I think we're going to need to reschedule the show anyway because
we will.
This is a show that we really needed to do live, and so maybe we can talk.
People were interested in it, and I know that people would have had a lot of things that they wanted to say. So, no, we're going to reschedule.
And I got to tell you, I was having a little bit of trouble with the service earlier today, getting some content loaded to the site.
Mike Vanderbord said that there were some problems with Blog Talk Radio's site in general right now. So,
yeah, it's been a while since it sort of bit us in the butt, but it definitely did tonight. So apologies to the folks listening, and apologies to Greg and Fran as well, because it's not
really. We're sorry.
No problem at all.
And
it looks like some of the people who are listening on the phone are sharing some of the things that are being said. So.
Great. And we lost Tanya, so I don't know if Tanya ever made it to the line before the switchboard cut off as well, so apologies for that as well. So, again, we're with Fran Melmed, Greg Matthews. We're talking about wellness. I'm Steve Bose. Sean Amorky, of course, is with us as well. We'll soldier along just like a couple guys, just friends chatting around
beer and
nachos at the pub, right? And so...
This is a lot like the first show that you did, you know, where it was just kind of out there and there were no questions, it was just people talking.
Yeah, it's great. And I see there's a few folks out there. I know Paul Hebert's on the line. I think Paul Smith is out
Mike
there as
Sonali.
Well.
Mike Sonali. Hey, Mike.
So super, and thanks for hanging out with us tonight. So you can't say anything on the phone, of course, because I can't pot up your line, but we appreciate the listen and hang out with us tonight and keep us honest, quite frankly, as well. So,
totally.
So that Shauna doesn't go too off the rails here.
Me?
Yeah. Now what else can go wrong? Now my cell phone is ringing, you know, like out of nowhere.
On wood that nothing else happens.
Yeah, what else? Like the power will go out any minute. And the weather's relatively nice where I am at, so. All right.
There's no storms in Alabama.
Yeah, I want to move along a little bit with Fran and Greg and talk a little bit about just wellness plans in general. So if we get past this idea of companies reaching the conclusion that this is a good thing to benefit the company to the bottom line and for workers themselves, let's assume that's all a given and, you know, maybe, I don't know what the stat is, 50% or 60% of companies, something like that, have initiated some types of wellness programs. I want to talk a little bit about wellness programs themselves and sort of the design of them. And what are some of the things that you know, folks who are either looking at starting a wellness program up in their organization or they have one already and they really they're trying to evaluate the effectiveness of the program. What are some of the elements of wellness plan design that are sort of important, essential, or maybe even proven commodities in this space? If Fran, maybe you first and then Greg had any comments about that design of programs itself.
Sure. I mean, let's just start off with the fact that my focus is communication, and that is my area of expertise. I have opinions, but I want to make clear that I don't do wellness design.
What?
I do it all. I do it all, right? Who am I kidding?
Nice.
I think it really starts with the population. Who are you dealing with and what are their health issues? And then if you really looked at a larger scan, and this is where I'm kind of Pollyanna-ish, you look at the larger scan of what's going on culturally in terms of work-life fit and general communication, because we know that general communication between a manager, my sense of upward mobility and contributing to something, they all tie in to overall health and well-being. And they're not necessarily always looked at from a wellness perspective, but I think that they should be. But you would start by looking at your population. What are their health risks? And try and target your programs toward those health risks and managing those. I mean, that's at a high level what I can offer as a statement. Then I turn it over to Greg, who's actually done the design aspect of it.
And I think that's good, Fran. I think probably most companies don't even think about their population and designing programs specifically to meet the health needs of a population. So I agree that that's important, and I would say that the logical follow-on step for that is that wellness programs need to start in the workplace. So if you're thinking about workplace wellness, there's no better place to start than the place where people spend most of their time. And a lot of companies and a lot of organizations get into the habit of thinking that wellness is something that you do outside the office, you know, that it's a gym membership or, step class or something like that. But I think that the best way to tackle wellness is to look not only at the health needs of the population, but what is the workflow like for the people that work in the company? What do they sit at cubes all day? Are they in a dark cubicle? Are they on a factory floor? And I think it's really important to be able to build, I hate to even say wellness program, but I think it's important to build ways to live healthier inside that workflow. And what I mean by that is, just as an example, in my floor at Humana, we were all in cubes, so, you know, standard kind of cube form, but we had a couple of what they call walk stations. They're pedometer desks. Treadmill desks.
Treadmill desks.
Right, yeah, so you could get up, and if you had a conference call or something, you could take the conference call on a treadmill. And basically what that does is it allows you to incorporate a healthy activity into your workflow with no disruption whatsoever. Another thing that we did is we created a bike-sharing program so that people could get easily from one building to another in Humana's campus in Louisville and not have to take their cars. So it is a healthy, environmentally friendly way that, again, fits into people's workflow. They have to move back and forth between the buildings. Why not do it on a bike? So that's another thing that I think is pretty important. And I guess if you'll allow me to continue ranting here for a minute, I think maybe the most important aspect of wellness programs to really ensure that they're going to be effective is to reverse engineer the process a little bit and think, once you understand what your goals are, think a little bit less about what you want people to do and think a little more about what people actually want to do, what they find fun and interesting, and then find ways to build health into that. So if there are ways that your wellness program can include games and competitions and challenges and rewards, things that are fun, and then find things, you know, healthy things you can attach to that, I think that that's awesome.
And I'm just going to tag on to that to say that, you know, for people that have chronic conditions, so something more severe, you obviously need to give a little bit more. And from that perspective, you also want to be tackling what's happening to them across the board. So if they're suffering from stress because of weight gain due to diabetes, then how do you tackle that whole person versus just tackling are they taking their medicine and so forth? And that, I think, is something that, from my perspective and my understanding, most insurance companies are not doing that well. And there's a lack of integration for most companies with the providers or vendors that they work with to be able to provide that kind of whole person approach. And so I think we have a long way to go, too, in doing this, not only from being able to make it comfortable to have a treadmill desk at work, or I on a lark yesterday tweeted out, let's have a 3-minute dance break, and about over the course of the day, 7 to 10 people joined me, and I spoke with the senior HR manager at Zappos, and I mentioned that she'd love this because we had a conversation when I interviewed her for my blog, and she said, oh, I do love this. I'm going to have my HR do this and send it out, you know, and have, we're going to do a 3-minute dance break at work. Not every culture can do that right now.
Right.
So it's how do we slowly migrate that. What, Shauna?
I would love to have dancing breaks.
I felt so much better yesterday from having done that. I felt more energetic. My body felt so much better, and I felt more focused, and I was a whole lot happier.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And it's funny, Fran, like something like that, you know, whether or not
I mean, like, that's the kind of thing that doesn't really require any formal, official, sanctioned kind of effort, right, from the organization to, if you have the right kind of culture, that's something that could happen inside organizations just
right.
sort of organically.
Right.
If you've got the ability to sort of communicate and you have the kind of culture that would be receptive to that kind of, A, the communication to, hey, get up and dance around in your cube for 5 minutes or 3 minutes, and B, sort of, you know, you don't have that sort of, you know, the typical or sort of stereotypical, you know, supervisor manager type peering out of his or her office saying, what's going on out there? You know,
stop that messing about, right?
Come back to work.
Exactly. You know, Fran, Greg, you know, I know, you know, we were missing Tanya tonight, you know, who's in the business of designing wellness programs, and she specifically wanted to talk about things that don't work in wellness programs. So I'm going to go ahead and take a chance and ask you guys the question that I was planning to ask her is, what are some of the things maybe you've seen in your experience either as a, you know, consulting, as a professional, or just in organizations you've happened to work in, that, you know, aspects of these types of programs that simply just don't work or fall flat or really just kind of a bad idea, but that you've seen in your experience?
Greg, you want to go first?
You know, I think, I guess generically speaking, the reason that wellness programs fail is because they tend to be based on a rather paternalistic idea about what people ought to be doing. And most wellness programs aren't really designed. You know, giving people information, you know, a brochure about how to lower the size of your meals and thereby be healthier, it's fine, but there's nothing very inspired about it. And I think that's still what the majority of wellness programs look like today. They're very much informational. They're very much sort of the paternalistic system saying you
right.
are.
And I got to tell you, Greg, there's nothing fun about lower portion sizing. There's no fun there. Not in my opinion. Not in my world view.
Portions seem so silly. One thing with the Ben and Jerry's is like 4 servings. How does that function? Really?
Right.
Exactly. It doesn't seem fair, does it? And, you know, I guess the other thing that stands out to me is that a lot of times companies don't, you know, they want to have a wellness program so that they can say they have a wellness program, but their heart's not really in it. They're not really committed. And so even things that may be good at first tend to fall flat because it really does, it takes a pretty significant commitment, I think, to really have an organization that's focused on health and wellness.
Yeah, I saw Paul tweet out earlier that, you know, should we call them wellness strategies and not programs? And I, for one, always use the word kind of wellness effort or, you know, for lack of a better word, because I don't think the idea of having programs suggests something long-term and long-range. It's usually kind of a program you do for a while, like a campaign you do for a while, and then it falls off. It's the flavor of the month, and that's where HR and wellness and other things get their bad name. And I think that if you're truly going to be doing this, then you just need to keep on slowly pushing that wheel ahead till you get to the 3-minute dance break as a norm on the factory floor. You know, you get what was it? Flash dance.
oh, that's a nice one. I love that movie.
Yeah. Now, so okay, so Fran, so you're sort of hinting at, you know, perhaps slower process, a more thoughtful process, and sort of leading me into the next question I wanted to ask was, you know, what happens when you as a HR benefits type professional and have worked hard to devise a program or a plan or an effort, whatever we're calling it, that you feel makes sense and would be valuable to the organization and to the employees, and it just doesn't seem to be catching on? You know, is there, you know, people are not that interested. You know, I'm busy, I just want to do my job and leave, and I don't want to be bothered with your dance breaks and your treadmill desks and, you know, your flash dancey kind of thing. So, I mean, what does the organization do in that?
I think, what Greg was talking about earlier was making it much more organic, that it's really not something that you are doing per se. And here we're talking about, you know, really general health. So it's not something that you're doing or not doing. It's something that becomes, at least at work, a way of doing our work. you know, something we haven't talked about before is that we're only, you know, some of us are at work longer than others, but eventually we go home and we have families. And we have health issues in this family, and now even in, you know, it's, again, not uniquely America, developing countries have severe chronic condition problems, and that's going to be a huge cost problem for us globally. So, you know, companies who also happen to cover, if you just come back to where we started at the beginning of the talk, where people are like, I don't buy this, this is all about the money, which, you know,
right.
It is about the money, too. Let's not be ridiculous. But a large part of the people who are also covered by employers, speaking specifically for the U.S., are family members. And so companies also need to consider, how do I get outside of these walls and bring those people in, or help bring our efforts, our focus, our desire and our need to create healthier environments outside of our company?
Yeah, that's a great point, Fran. You know, I think that one that's easy to is easy to miss, right? That so many dependents, spouses, children, and whatnot are being covered by organizations. And you know, if we're looking at this from a cost perspective, that relative wellness, if you will, of that population is a big impact to the organization.
Yeah, something like 80% or something.
Yeah, so what are some good ideas to sort of bring those people into the fold that, you know, that the organization isn't dealing with every single day? They don't see them. They can't really even directly contact them, right, and communicate to them.
They absolutely can reach out to them by putting things like, I remember when Jen Benz was a guest on your show, she talked about putting benefits websites on the internet, not on your intranet. So you make information, you know, as a basic, you make information available to all. You make the tools available to all. You look at the eligibility and make sure that you're not just saying, I know some companies who just from a financial incentive perspective will only provide incentives for taking action on healthy programs or completing health risk assessments and things like that, only to the employee, not to the spouse as well. And they stop short of that. Two, doing more expansive things, you know, which I'm pretty sure, Greg, you've done at Humana, right, in terms of bringing the family in and also testing things in the community, where you had talked to me a long time ago about testing things in the community with elders. And that stood out to me.
Yep. And I would say, from my knowledge base, I don't know of anybody who has really licked this issue. This is one, engaging the family in a wellness program, I think has a lot of legs, but I don't know of anybody that's done it really well. The only time I've seen it even attempted in my brief experience is that we did do a pilot program at Humana that was, it was a kids' health game. That was open to all of our employees' kids. Actually, it was open to the public, but it was specifically encouraged for our employees' kids. And it was a game that was it involved kids doing healthy missions promoting the Disney movie G-Force.
Okay.
And the idea was that they could become G-Force agents if they completed these missions, all of which involved doing healthy stuff. And one of the things that we know is that when kids start to engage in healthy stuff, their families are a lot more likely to engage in doing healthy stuff too. So I think there's absolutely no reason that you can't do games, contests, and so forth with employees' families as a way to bring, you know, the employee, to increase the employee's likelihood of participating as well.
Yeah, I believe a client, we've addressed kids to, thinking of that idea that through the kids, you help them change their behaviors, but they get the conversation going about what is a healthy behavior, what is a healthy lifestyle. We've done art contests with kids. We've asked them specific questions and asked them to respond and answer. I know at IBM, who is not a client, they have done things incentive-wise with a children's health rebate to be able to have to work on kids' health. And to provide an incentive for more families to take advantage of that. as well. So I think that there are some companies out there, but I agree with Greg that companies right now are really thinking about their employees, and they're just beginning to think about how they're going to broach wellness with their employees, let alone looking further.
Now, just maybe just a quick one. We'll sort of stick to our normal schedule. Had we been broadcasting live this whole time, there would have been about 10 minutes to go on the show. So let's. I know.
No
I'm
after
so
show either.
So, well, right. The show is the after
this
show,
is the after
kind
show.
Of, right? The show was 10 minutes long, and most of that was that song I played. So.
Oh, I don't know anything about the after show.
Yeah. I didn't know there was an after show.
The after show is when the live stream cuts off, which
cuts
is
out.
At the top of the hour. Anybody who's still on the line, we usually chat for a minute or two in the after show, which does make the archive, but does not stream out over the internet live. And so, since our show got cut off at 15 minutes, this last 40 minutes or so has been after show, if you will. So
right.
Everything makes the archive, but you had to have been on the line to be able to hear any of it. So.
Right, and we can't put anyone up now.
Yeah, I can't see anybody who's up because I was getting, I know our friend Paul Hebert's been listening in tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I appreciate that as well because I was
yes.
going to get into
Thank
the
you
sort
guys
of incentive.
So much.
I wanted to play the incentive and motivation card and get Paul's input a little bit on that. And,
totally.
When I talk about if you find your program's not really taking off and you're not able to. Get the traction you need. What might be some of the incentives or disincentives, right? What are some strategies that may work? Like, for example, if an organization has decided, I think it's time to start putting the hammer down on folks who smoke, or we want to charge
right.
them, a higher premium for their medical plan, which I guess has become an increasingly common approach in organizations. So what's the best strategy to sort of drive more people to quit smoking? Is it to come down hard on the smokers, or is it to kind of say, well, all you non look at all the great stuff the non-smokers get, So that's my Paul Hebert kind of question. So
sticker carrot?
Yeah, right. It's just a weird thing to me. I mean, it's just such
mm-hmm.
a, most managers and organizations, you just have to be worried about getting your work done, getting the performance that you need, getting half the time getting people to show up and not do anything wildly inappropriately. And when we introduce some of these concepts to the mix, it gets even more complicated.
Well, I'm looking at a study from National Business Group on Health and Towers Watson. It's their 15th annual study, and it runs down kind of the financial incentives that are most broadly being used right now. And, talking about the carrot versus the stick, the stick right now, for instance, in terms of requiring completion of like a health risk appraisal to enroll in a plan is not being broadly used right now. The carrot of incenting people that complete certain health engagement activities. So that could be a walking challenge, or that could be doing some coaching or counseling. That is much more broadly used. In terms of like tiering premiums and so forth, I don't think that's being broadly used right now. I don't have data here, but from anecdotal data, from working with different clients and talking with more, that I'm not hearing about that a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if more people start to go to that. And in some ways, I think it follows the auto insurance industry, for example. It says, we'll model ourselves. You have certain healthy or unhealthy behaviors, and we're going to base our costs off of those.
And I would say I would agree with that, Fran, just based on my anecdotal experience working inside the insurance industry, to say that if you leave smoking out, because I think it is getting pretty common to charge either to give a discount for non-smokers, but I mean it's all really a penalty for smokers when you strip it right down. But I think there are very few companies that are actually incorporating healthy activities into the premium itself. I think it's a lot more common to do carrot-oriented things like incentive and reward programs that say you get a gift card if you do X, Y, and Z, or if you do A, B, and C, you get discounts at such and such vendor. Those kinds of things are more common. And certainly, I was just going to say, I really like the idea of having a more carrot-oriented program. I think there's a place for the stick, but to be honest with you, I think we tend to go right to the stick, especially with smoking, for example. You know, everything smoking is so negative. Stamp out smoking, you know, stop the butts, you know, all this kind of negative imagery associated with that. I don't know if too many programs that have been really designed to appeal to smokers and be a positive, reinforcing kind of a thing around stopping smoking. But it seems to me that that's worth trying.
And I'm noticing some interesting conversation on the Twitter stream that does still exist. And it's talking about how hard it is to change behavior that, you know, to quote Janet McNichol, if fear of dying doesn't cause people to change, adjusting their insurance premiums sure won't. And I think that, you know, and that's a very good point. The changing behavior is really hard.
I might argue with that is just because dying is a nebulous, right? No one believes they're going to die.
Right.
But I know
it's,
I'm going to pay.
It's too long term.
I know I'm going to pay more in my biweekly check next week, right? That I know, and that's real to me.
And perhaps that would happen, for the shorter term. I think we could play that out. But if you also look at what the in the health world, they've been grappling with how to change behavior for a very long time, far longer than most employers have been trying to deal with changing health behaviors.
Right.
Trying to dig into how do we make change happen? How do we nudge better behaviors? How do we, do taxing healthy foods or subsidizing, or do taxing bad foods, you know, unhealthy foods, or subsidizing healthy foods? Which works better?
Right.
You know, we don't have all the answers, and so, we have 4 minutes on the clock. This is where I would go to the point of saying, I think that employers really have an opportunity to be health activists and to do much more outside of their walls with the community, with the government, with schools, and so forth to make a huge difference. If you look down the road at their new incoming workforce, they have huge health problems. They're coming in the door with health problems. And so, you know, to me, it seems logical. I understand where people would push back, but I think that there is a place and a case to be made for employers taking a bigger stand as a partner in this conversation.
Yeah, great. And, you know, when we reschedule the show, and I promise we will, I think I'd like to talk
about
it.
Wait, we have to go through this again?
We're going to do it again. Because quite frankly, we're getting a lot of scrutiny from the handful of people who can actually listen live. So
I know, it's hard, but right now they're shut out.
Once we're back open to the full audience, it's going to be tough for us. And, of course, we got to find Tanya and get her back on. But the the idea of organizations, right, lots of organizations trying to do this sort of individually, you know, and what could be the value in working in a more community fashion or working with the providers or the dominant providers in a given market to try to figure out ways that effective strategies or efforts could be leveraged across organizations is something that would be really interesting to explore maybe in the next time we talk about this. All right, quick reset. 2 minutes left in the show. We're going to keep to our normal show. Our friends at Blog Talk Radio did try to help us, but apparently they failed. So, again, for anybody who listens back to the internet stream, you know, they did try. I know there were some.
I tried. I wasn't fast enough.
That's unbelievable. But I think that live and learn. So. Next time we'll be more careful. But Sean, I didn't notice that until, you know, we were about 5 minutes into the show.
And
we were hanging out on the pre-show, and there was no indication that there was anything awry. So huge apologies to, first of all, apologies
Sorry.
To Fran and to Greg. So, you know,
Sorry.
The experience wasn't quite complete for you for not having the full live stream out there tonight. So we will definitely try to reschedule you guys to come back
we
on
will.
The show. And
hanging out and talking with you guys, I'd consider a pretty fun evening, whether there's anybody listening or not.
All right. Well, it's great. Well, we'll make the archive. We'll get the archive tweeted out shortly, in about 10 or 15 minutes. I do want to say thanks for the folks who hung out on the line. I don't know who you are. I know Paul was there. The other Paul was there. A few other folks. So thanks so much for hanging out with us and listening in and tweeting as well and carrying on the flag for us in when we were sort of kind of having a private, semi-private conversation tonight as well. Thanks for that. I won't even get – Sean, I can't even play the entry, the exit music or the
– We can sing.
We may have to. We have to do a three-minute dance break.
We'll drive the rest of the people away.
Yeah.
We can turn on iTunes.
Yeah, right. So, you know, anyway, I just want to say thanks again to Fran Melmed, Greg Matthews for being with
us
tonight.
Thanks,
Fran and Greg, both of them created the CoHealth chat on Twitter. Fran, is that the first Wednesday of every month?
Third. It's the third Wednesday of every month at 12 noon Eastern.
Cool.
And your hashtag is CO_health, right?
Correct.
And you can find us.
That's a go ahead, Greg.
And we will tweet that out.
Good.
Yeah, that's a great chat. I've sort of lurked on the outskirts of it, but really interesting and would love to participate sometime as well.
Please.
So thanks. Thanks again to Fran and Greg. Fran, I didn't even get my – I had some funny lines. I flustered at the beginning of the show.
Oh, no.
I forgot my funny lines.
Oh, no.
Can I
find them out until now?
Save them until the next show.
No. Can I? Can I say one of them?
Please.
Do it.
I had Fran is the E.E. Cummings of communications blockers because of her disdain of the capital letter. I had a line about the – I had a line about the cheeseburger Doritos I've been eating all week and the wellness show and how sad we are as a society that the regular Dorito in its sort of horrible...
Isn't good enough?
Yeah, that was good enough. We had to go further. We had to push the... No, let's make this even worse. Smelling.
We're America, Steve. America always can go further.
I know. It's innovation. We have, like, you know, all kinds of problems and unemployment, but we're innovating in the world of the Dorito. So, but I guess that's good, I suppose. People are employed making those Doritos, so I'll look at the bright side of that.
Yeah, what's interesting
there
is I've spoken with people from PepsiCo who have a wellness program that is well-respected. And, you know, just as they on the marketplace will talk about, you know, almost like you would with a kid. These are your sometime foods, right? These are your growing foods, and these are not your growing foods. They find, you know, they don't see any disconnect with wellness. You know, that it's just that it's all part of living. It's just that you have each in its place. And same with McDonald's, who also has a wellness effort. You know, and I'm sure that, you know, should we have a Twitter stream right now, it'd be going wild with jokes on that one because it's ripe for jokes. But it may be more the way that we're looking at wellness, and that's where some of the wellness haters and come from, right, this feeling of being denied or being told what to do versus this idea of being healthy and, again, talking about it from a financial, physical and emotional and mental way, which we didn't really touch on, that some of those other ways of being healthy and well. I lost my train of thought. Oh, my God. I have a head cold. It was going to be brilliant. I went on too long. See, I told you, soliloquies, not sound bites.
Right. That's okay.
Good night, everybody.
No, Fran. Look, I think you're right on the money. We'll definitely have time the next go around to explore these topics, and we definitely will. We'll get this back on the schedule.
We will.
Let's. Last thoughts for me. Next week, Shauna, HR Technology Conference. The show will be live from Chicago. It's going to be a big event, and we're really excited about that.
I can't wait.
Oh my gosh, I don't. I'm so unprepared to, like, go on this trip, so...
Whatever. You're used to traveling by now.
I know, right? In the next four... But now I'm, like, I'm mired in, you know, in real stuff, so it's going to be tough to...
You have life getting in the way.
It's going to be tough to tear myself away from figuring out how much extra to charge our smokers for their health insurance. We're opening them at which is not even a joke. That's like something I'm involved with right now. So, yeah, next week we're at HR Tech, and that's going to be fun. And back in October, we've got some great shows lined up. We're going to be doing a show in conjunction with our friends from Voice of Careers and New Media Services for their Career Summit. I don't know if you've heard about the Career Summit that they'll be doing. I guess it's in later October into November. So we're going to do show. We're going to be doing a little Career Summit show in conjunction with our friends Mark and Lori on that. October 14th, Shauna, the women of HR are back on the HR Hub.
Oh, yeah. Work on your giggles.
That's right. So that'll be your call for that night and lining up some of the great women of HR. And then October 21st, I'm pretty excited, Fistful of Talent Radio comes back.
Yay!
To the HR Hub.
We haven't had them in a while.
For the first time in forever. So Chris will be there, and I hope lots of Paul Hebert, I hope you can make it. You're still listening with us. Fistful of Talent Radio, Tim Sackett, I think, will be with us. Jessica Lee. I'm hoping, you know, it's a Fistful of Talent radio night, so, you know, I'm on the Fistful of Talent now, too, so I get to participate.
Yes, you are.
We'll be excited about that. So, huge night on the HR Happy Hour in October, and more fun to come. So, again, Greg, thank you so much. Fran,
thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks for having us.
We'll
reschedule. Thanks, everyone, for hung out with us.
And apologies again to everyone else out there. And thanks, and good night from the HR Happy Hour. We'll see you next time.
Night, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.